Yes, I've seen plenty of things, but I didn't see any salty plums up there in Darwin. I looked, I couldn't find the salty plum truck. You've sold me a pup, haven't you? Matty Russell, you G'd me up last week. You said, when you go to Darwin, you're doing the Eels and the Cowboys up there, make sure you have some salty plums. I couldn't find the plums.
You think I have had a lend, don't you, Woz? But I have photographic proof right there that they do serve salty plums at Darwin's TIO Stadium. There it is on my media feed on Twitter. Proof you should have tried the salty plums. But aside from
they're
the
$3.
Plums, $3.
The salty plums are $3. This is from August of 2014.
That's right. But I'm sure they're still on sale.
That's a fair effort to find that on your phone.
Darwin, how was it? Looked good. Brad Arthur sitting out in the veranda. All he needed was a Bacardi and he was fine.
Darwin was beautiful, 31 degrees during the day and then crystal clear skies this time of year up there. It's a fantastic place to go during wintertime. And I've only been to Darwin twice, both times for football games with the Eels hosting their now five home games up there over the course of the last 5 years, since you must have done the first one, obviously, back in 2014, because that was their first home game up there in this deal with the Northern Territory government. It was terrific. I'd love to get up there, though, with the family and go further out to Litchfield National Park and to go all the different places, go barramundi fishing. I love eating barramundi, so, and I like fishing, so barramundi fishing would be right up my alley. At some stage, though, I will get up there and take the family up and have a bit of a week or so up there and look around. It's great place.
That's the aim of the Northern Territory government, to do this deal with Parramatta, bring the rugby league up there, get people like you and I visiting or watching and saying, let's go back and let's take the family. It is a great part of the world.
Further to that, you know what it's also about? It's also about, and the reason they have the deal with Parramatta is because they're targeting people in Western Sydney to go up there and have a look, quite obviously. And that's just, you know, tourists from anywhere to go and have a look, and our reach is far and wide on Fox League across Australia and into New Zealand and other places as well around the globe through Watch NRL. You can see it wherever you're sitting around the world these days, the NRL. But they're also targeting families who might be thinking that it's a bit expensive in Sydney, I can get more bang for my buck somewhere else. And the reason they have this sponsorship deal is they're trying to attract families to go from Western Sydney to move up to Darwin, start their life up there. There are, you know, industries and things that are expanding up there. They want more people to go on. The more people you have, the more money in the economy, the bigger the place gets. That's the whole theory. So that's part of the deal as well, not just the tourism.
Take your air conditioner with you. And,
Yes, you'll need some air conditioning.
Summer, you don't need to watch the weather forecast because it's the same every damn day.
It's like going to Fiji. You just wake up and it's 31 degrees pretty much every day of the year, no matter what time of the year it is. The climate, it just rains more at different times of the year. Obviously, at the moment, up in Darwin, it's not the wet season. It was terrific. I had a great time.
When I went up there in 2015, I remember calling Jared Haynes' 100th career try for the Parramatta Eels as they beat the Canberra Raiders. What did you make of the Eels in their latest win up there against a very, very ordinary North Queensland Cowboys, it must be said?
You know, the Eels, I guess, you know, if they'd had hit rock bottom this season, it was the week before against the Newcastle Knights when they were just listless. And Brad Arthur said, we need to find some pride in the jersey, the logo. Find some pride in ourselves. They were searching for something to bounce off the back of what had happened against the Newcastle Knights. You know, they were better, no doubt about that. But geez, the Cowboys were disappointing. And you know, you were never going to tip against the Cowboys because they were playing Parramatta, quite obviously, who'd, you know, lost five in a row and six in a row at the start of the season. But the Cowboys win against the Seagulls. We should have just tossed that form out the window because they beat the Seagulls. Yeah, sure. They looked okay in doing it, but the Seagulls didn't have Tom nor Jake Trbojevic. And you take those two out of the Manly lineup, well, they are a shell of the team that they could potentially be. They were ordinary in that game at Brookvale. And, you know, while the Cowboys got them and beat them pretty comfortably, we should have put a red felt pen through that form line. But I still wouldn't have tipped Parramatta, no matter how much free money you would have given me, because I would have thought the Cowboys, off the back of that win, would find something and spark their second half of the season. It's JT's final season in the NRL. They'll get something going here. And while they might not make the top eight, at some point in time, they might look like they'll make the top eight. Well, forget that, because they're no chance.
What's going to happen now to the JT farewell? In the back of our minds, we would have been thinking at the start of the season, the Cowboys are going to have a final surge. We're riding the end of this possibly future Immortals career. It's going to be, it must be said, a fairly sad end to JT's career on current form and the way they are tracking.
We'll go through some of the teams, the runs home during the course of our little half-yearly report here in a moment. But, you know, you go through the Cowboys, what they face. They've got the Warriors at home this week. Then they've got the Rabbitohs. Then they've got the bye before Origin 3. They take on the Raiders, the Dragons. I mean, there's nobody there right now, I could say, with any hope of, you know, being right, that they would win any of the games they have remaining. They play the Eels in round 25. They play the Titans in round 26. Ordinarily, you'd say, yeah, they could win those two, but they just got beaten by Parramatta.
In round 25, JT's last game, given that the Cowboys aren't going to make the finals, it's listed to be played, if I'm not mistaken, against the Gold Coast at Robina, correct?
That's their final. Sorry, yeah, I said round 25. Well, it's only 25 rounds this year. I've reverted to type.
Yeah.
Previous years. But round 24, the Eels at home, their final home game of the season. They finish on the road against the Titans in round 25 in what is looking very likely to be Jonathan Thurston's final game of footy.
Watch this space. There might be a late swap with the Titans, if they agree to it, taking that game to North Queensland. So the people of far North
Queensland... Well, that would make sense for both parties, yeah, because it would serve... Yeah, the North Queensland fans well to have that final chance to say goodbye to JT. And you would imagine, given what he's done, you'd think it's a sellout and it's a big gate for the Gold Coast, as opposed to drawing 7,000 people maybe to the Cbus Super Stadium.
You reckon they'd get 10 with the JT farewell 10. Element. But still, you can see it working for both clubs and for the game. So yeah, let's hope that happens. I'll give you Russell's snapshot of the round we just had.
I'm
stealing a bit from Mark Gasnier here, who in the post-match show yesterday, Monday, Holiday Monday, made a great point. The top three teams, St George, Illawarra, Penrith, South Sydney, all well represented at the Origin level last Wednesday night, and all winning the following weekend in really close games. And it was a great point by Gaz. Good teams find a way to win, even when perhaps they shouldn't. They've got players backing up. And I thought it was a really pertinent point that the top teams, despite having excuses not to win and being under real pressure, did win. The other element of my weekend was calling another Kalyn Ponga highlight. Now, I know that Newcastle was beaten by the Roosters, but they came late at the Roosters, courtesy Kalyn Ponga, who took on the line, broke the line, passed magnificently, found Sione Mutaiti, who went back to his fullback, and Ponga scored. And it was just another highlight. You've called Ponga highlights this season. I called a length of the field try on the Gold Coast. There was another one. And I was left asking the question to my co-commentators, at 20 years of age, can Kalyn Ponga be a Dally and medalist like Greg Alexander was at 20, like Mick Potter was at 20? Time will tell. And a little element that gave me a laugh was a newcomer to the Fox Sports production crew yesterday, who didn't have the greatest handle on rugby league players, past or present, obviously, because he mistook the one and only Greg Alexander, nicknamed Brandy, for Randy. And called him Randy.
Straight from Texas.
If Brandy's nickname wasn't cemented, I reckon we'd have a new one.
Randy.
Brandy Alexander.
Randy Alexander.
Randy Alexander.
It's got a ring to it, doesn't it?
It does.
That could catch on.
It's funny how you change one letter and you change the nickname completely. Randy seems a lot way from Brandy.
You know, if New South Wales win the Origin Series, the Blues advisor, Randy Alexander, he won't care what you call him.
No. So there you go. There's three little elements.
Randy Alexander.
From the weekend just gone.
Just to further to your point on the top three all winning off the back of Origin and the rep duty, of the top eight teams going into round 14 over the weekend, seven of the top eight won. The only team that didn't was the Broncos, because they played the Melbourne Storm, who were fifth. Of the bottom eight, seven of the bottom eight lost. The only winners were the Eels, who beat the Cowboys. Everybody else in the bottom eight lost. So the gulf, and it's, you know, approaching a gulf between those who are in contention and those who are out of contention, continues to grow. And there are some big games coming up over round 15 and the next couple of weeks involving those teams, 8, 9 and 10, the Broncos, the Tigers and the Raiders, which probably leads us into our just past the half-yearly report. Now, if you listen to the podcast regularly, you'll cast your memories back. And after round eight, we did our end-of-term report. If we break them up into first term, second term, third term, after the first term, the first eight games of the season, we did our end-of-term report card. And we had various categories for the different teams. Keeping the last weekend of September free was our top category. And we had just a couple of teams in that category. At that stage, the Dragons and the Storm. Now, the Dragons had started the season absolutely on fire, winning their first six games. They were 7 from 8 through that first 2 months of the season. The Storm were travelling pretty well as well, despite having a couple of losses to the Sharks and also the Tigers back-to-back. In fact, they lost twice to the Tigers in those first 5 games, but they had just put the sword through the Warriors, who were travelling very nicely themselves, quite obviously, in that beginning of the season. They beat the Warriors 50 points to 10. That impressed us greatly. And so we had the Dragons and the Storm as the teams that we said should keep the last weekend of September free. I've expanded that two now to 4 teams. On the Smith table, I've got the Dragons, the Storm, the Panthers, and quite obviously the Rabbitohs as the 4 teams at this point who can keep the last weekend of September free. So if you're fans of those teams, don't book any holidays because you might well be at ANZ Stadium on the last Sunday of September.
I agree with that, Woz. The only team that I'd like to put in there that I can't ignore despite the fact they haven't yet found their best is the Sydney Roosters. Now, I've called a couple of games this season of the Roosters where they have looked decidedly average. Even in winning, they haven't had the killer punch or that standout element that, say, the top teams have had. But I just go across the field and look at the players and the signs, the glimpses they have given. You don't want to be at your best at this time of year. You want to be at your best through August and September. And I'm convinced that the Roosters can still achieve that. So I would have them in that group as well. I think they can win the premiership still.
And one of the big reasons why they can still win the premiership is defence. And defence wins competitions. We have long established that now, haven't we, over the course of decades in reality. And the Roosters have the best defence in the competition after the first half of the season. I'm madly scrambling to find the defence stats from my work over the weekend.
Most tries and from kicks as well.
Well, they actually, they had slipped to third going into the weekend behind the Panthers and the Tigers, but they did a couple of weeks ago had the best defence. They're now only 1 point per game worse than the Panthers after the weekend, and then the Tigers are still thereabouts, despite their attack being anemic in recent times. But the Tigers still have pretty good defence. So the Roosters, with their defence, can still, win the premiership. I've got them in the next category. Do you think we're a contender? And after 8 games, we had the Panthers, the Warriors, Tigers, Broncos, Knights, Sharks, Rabbitohs, all in that category. So quite obviously, I've bumped up the Rabbitohs. I've bumped up the Panthers into the top line, keeping the last weekend of September free. Do you think we're a contender? Now only contains the Warriors, the Sharks, and the Roosters.
Well, I'd go Warriors, Sharks only. I've brushed Brisbane. Warriors, interesting period coming up for them was because they've been inconsistent and they have a really important cluster of games coming up. Given their last month is predominantly at home, predominantly against teams outside the top eight, the next 5 weeks. So the origin period, basically, where they have done very well, should decide whether the Warriors are a top four team or just scrambling into the top eight team. Really important and good signs for them with that win on the weekend against Manly, albeit in Christchurch.
Yeah. The Roosters, of course, casting our memories back again, were in that category. Is there a chance we actually suck? And they were the only team in that category after 8 rounds. So I've bumped them up from do you think we actually suck? But they've been replaced by a team who used to be do you think we're a contender? And that team, who do you reckon that is?
Should I growl now? Is it the Tigers?
No. Well, I actually, this morning when I was going through this, I had the Tigers in this category. But for the moment, I've got only the Brisbane Broncos in is there a chance we actually suck?
Right.
Because I just don't know at the moment what to make of the Broncos. I certainly don't think they should be banking on keeping the last weekend of September free.
No. No.
And I'm not entirely sure they're contenders.
Well, I just said that. I've brushed them. I've put them in the same category you have.
I think there's a chance they actually suck.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I agree with you. And Melbourne, you know, beat them convincingly in the end. And I want to see a string of really dominant performances from the Broncos, and we're just not getting it. We're not getting it. And there are question marks over key positions still. So I'm happy with that. I'm happy with their classification.
They have a massive game coming up this weekend. They take on the Sharks. Now, the Sharks at the moment are 2 wins clear of the Broncos. So that's a four-point game. That's a four-point swing, that one. If the Sharks win that game, they go to 10 wins. The Broncos would remain 7 wins and now have 7 losses should they lose to the Sharks. They'd be 3 games behind the Sharks. The Roosters this weekend, they've got a big game against the Panthers as well. The Broncos, they really fall back into that dogfight, and it might be for 8th place only. If they lose to the Sharks this weekend, it's a huge game.
Give me the Broncos' run over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
The Broncos in the run home, they play 6 teams currently in the top 8. Ooh. They play 5 teams currently in the bottom 8. So they've got the Sharks this week. Of the other top 8 teams they play the Warriors, the Panthers, the Sharks. Again, they've got them twice in the next 6 games. They finish with 2 teams, the Rabbitohs and the Roosters, in rounds 23, 24 respectively. Mm. Their last game of the season is against Manly. It's a tough run when you've only got, to this point of the season, 7 wins in the bank. They need at least 5 more wins, and they play 5 teams in the bottom 8, but they're no guarantee to win all of those. They're no guarantee to win any of those, given what they showed in the second half against the Melbourne Storm. Their first half was very good, quite obviously, but they are a team very much in that fight for 8th place, and it might be 8th place. It might be hard for them to move beyond. Certainly, they won't. You know, it's hard to imagine they could even challenge for the top 4 at this stage unless they go on a real tear of wins. And given the run they have, I can't see them doing that.
You know what? We're just past the halfway mark of the season. I'm happy to lock in the top 7 sides to finish in the top 8, order, I don't know yet. Brisbane might be the only team that can drop out if West Tigers or Canberra get on a roll. So Brisbane's fate might not only be related to their form from here on in, but to what the Tigers and Raiders do. Because after that, from Newcastle down, I've said 2019, please. So Tigers, Canberra, big game this weekend at Campbelltown.
They both play each other. And back to our end of term report after 8 weeks, I had the Raiders and the Eels in the category, we were only kidding. Because I thought off the back of 2 straight wins by Parramatta at that stage, so they lost their first 6. They then win 2 in a row against Manly and the Tigers. I thought, well, you know, there's a chance maybe they were only kidding and they'll get it going. Well, they then proceeded to lose 5 straight.
Right.
So they weren't kidding.
No.
They're bad.
Yeah.
Despite beating the Cowboys in Darwin last weekend, the Eels aren't a great team, and they will battle for the wooden spoon against the Bulldogs and potentially even the Cowboys or maybe the Seagulls. The wooden spoon is very much still an open race for mine. Joining the Eels in the category, we were only kidding. It's quite a fall from grace. But the Tigers, suddenly, I've got them in the category, we were only kidding, because they were 5-1, the Tigers, after 6 rounds. They had all those close wins off the back of their defence. They were enormous. But since that point in time, they've gone 2-6 in their next 8 games. They've won 2 of their next 8. And maybe that was an illusion, that early season form, and maybe they were only kidding in a reverse way to the Canberra Raiders, perhaps. But I've got them now. Maybe, you know, they've got a huge game this weekend against Canberra. That's another 4-point game. So, should the Tigers win that one, they'd be 8-7. The Raiders suddenly would be 5-9 and 3 games behind the West Tigers, who might jump back into the top 8 depending on what happens in that 7-8 battle between the Sharks and the Broncos. So, we've got this weekend 7-8 playing, Sharks Broncos, 9-10. Tigers versus Raiders. Those 2 games alone will go a long, long way to working out our top eight this year.
Huge. And before we leave the Tigers, Woz, every club has its hard luck stories, but you just touched on the fact the Tigers have lost six of their last eight. Four of those six losses have been by 2 points or less. I know there's a lot of numbers in there, so take it in again. Of the six losses over the last eight games, four of them have been by 2 points against Newcastle, against Parramatta, against the Roosters, and now against the Sharks. So can you imagine if they'd won two or three of those four that they lost so narrowly? Well, they're in the top eight. Maybe we've got them classified differently, but at the end of the season, they might look back at all these two-point losses and say, well, that was the difference.
Conversely, what if they'd lost two or three of those 1 and 2 point wins they had at the start
True.
Of the season?
Maybe it's balancing out.
They could be 4 and 8.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But I suppose I'm looking at it from the perspective of they were playing well against the Sharks. They led well at half time. You know, it wasn't a diabolical display. And in the end, they were beaten by a bit of Valentine Holmes' brilliance, a bit of Paul Gallen determination.
Yeah. They're finding ways, I think, at the moment to lose games. That they were in the same way they were finding ways to win games at the start of the season. And those sort of things keep rolling on. I guess they were early on. Now they stopped when they lost that 2 point game up there, found a way to cough up that lead against the Newcastle Knights at Tamworth. And it's been, you know, a tale of woe ever since. Their only two wins, it puts the form in perspective perhaps, against the Cowboys and the Bulldogs.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
there you go.
You know, it was a good performance at Leichhardt against the Cowboys in round 10. They snuck home against the Bulldogs a week and a bit ago, or 2 weeks ago now, lost a close one to the Roosters and then lost a close one to the Sharks. It can go either way for them. I can see them sticking into the top eight. I can see them, you know, falling badly from this point on and really struggling. And it's a similar story for the Canberra Raiders. They've got the Tigers this week, then they play the Broncos. Another game against one of the teams they're in a real head-to-head battle with for that, maybe, that eighth place, the final spot in the top eight.
Well, given their tough run home, the Raiders, you would say the next fortnight, is this too much of a sensational statement? The next two games decide Canberra's season. Unless they beat West Tigers and Brisbane, they're no chance.
Yeah, well, their next month, it really does decide their fate because they've got the Tigers, Broncos, then they've got the Bulldogs on the road, they've got the Cowboys at home. All of those teams are very beatable for the Canberra Raiders, but then they've got Murderers Row on the way home. They've got the Sharks. They've got the Storm. They've got the Panthers. They play the Tigers again, which could be another big game if they, you know, get through the next month or so in reasonable shape. Got the Tigers around 22, but they finish with the Roosters, the Rabbitohs, and the Warriors, importantly, on the road in New Zealand.
I don't care. They
have to win. I've got them having to win all of their next four games to get themselves just above 500. They would be 9 and 8 should they win their next four. The run home is awful.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it comes down to this weekend at Campbelltown. You'll see it on Fox League. Unless the Raiders beat West Tigers, they will not make the finals. Not only that, they've got to beat the Tigers and then back it up against the Broncos. Unless they're 2 from 2 over the next fortnight, still without Josh Hodgson, now without Jordan Rapana with that hamstring injury, who knows about Joey Leilua after his head knock. So that's the scenario for the Raiders, hanging on by their fingertips, and the nails will be cut unless they beat West Tigers.
Yeah, Josh Hodgson due back maybe as close as 2 weeks away. But Paulo is still a few weeks beyond that. Jordan Rapana now is out for as much as 2 months. It must be a grade 3 hamstring strain. It must be a really bad one to be out for that length of time. The Tigers, well, we're looking at their injuries. Benji, of course, with his calf muscle strain now. He might be out for 6 weeks. David Norfoluma isn't too far away from coming back also. But, you know, they're for the most part close to full strength. The Raiders will get better the longer the season goes on, barring, of course, further injury to players. And they've had a bit of a tough run at various stages this season with injuries. The Broncos, while we're just summing up those teams in that battle for the eighth place maybe, Matt Gillett maybe back as soon as a couple of weeks, maybe a month away or so. It's very much, in the hands of the medical staff up there at Brisbane as to when he returns with that neck injury. And Corbin Sims, maybe a couple of weeks away, maybe an extra one with that that broken jaw. I guess he might be a chance of being back sooner rather than later. But Gillett has been a big loss for them. I don't know how much of a difference, though, he would have made to the Broncos, you know, over the past 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, and then as we touched on earlier, have you got another class there for the wooden spoon was? Because it is a battle in four. Manly, Cowboys, Dogs, Eels. It's hard to pick. Eels trailing on 6 premiership points. Ahead of them, those other 3 on 8. It's going to be a good battle to see who can avoid 16th slot.
Yeah, so we had at the end of Term 1, Round 8, we had the Titans, Seagulls, Bulldogs and Cowboys in the category. Should the postseason trip be to Bali or Hawaii? At the moment, it's expanded to 6 teams. I had the Knights. The Knights falling all the way from, do you think we're a contender, to now being, should the postseason trip be Hawaii or Bali? Because I just can't see them, you know, bouncing back and suddenly reeling off, you know, a range of wins. They're losing 4 in a row from round 9 through round 12 to the Rabbitohs, the Panthers, the Titans and the Sharks. They then beat the Eels 30 points to 4 to break that losing streak, but then they lose to the Roosters over the weekend up there, despite the late game heroics of Kalen Ponga. I can't see them mounting a challenge, and you know, the Titans, the Seagulls, Cowboys, Dogs and Eels have been long gone for mine. So there's 6 teams planning the postseason trip right now.
Yeah, and Newcastle, you know, injuries biting hard. Both Saifiti twins injured. Mitchell Pearce has been missing for a while. Taumoga as well. They picked up more problems in that loss against the Roosters. So they're done on the back of injuries to a squad that couldn't afford. They needed luck like St. George Illawarra on the injury front. And the Dragons probably leading the field when it comes to good luck, touch wood, for Paul McGregor's sake, through the first half of the season, plus a bit without any significant dramas on that front.
To round up our little report here, just past the half-yearly report, looking at one end of the table there, the wooden spoon, going back to the top, though, the battle for the minor premiership and the top 2 places in particular, with 2 bites of the cherry and home advantage through potentially the final series until you get to the grand final, should you finish in the top 2 and then win in week 1. The top 3, they don't play each other from this point on in the run home. They've already played each other and they don't play each other again until we get to the final. So we won't have any of those big games in the last 2 rounds or so where we get a bit of a preview to the top 4 battles, or what we might see, you know, a grand final preview perhaps. We don't see any of those amongst the top 3 in the run home.
Well,
quite remarkable.
Let's have a look at the crystal ball. Remember last year, St. George Illawarra's finals campaign basically came down to round 26 where they lost to the Dogs and went out. As a result, the Cowboys came in and started their finals run. I wouldn't mind betting it's going to come down to the final round again between the Dragons and Penrith. They are separated by 1 point on the points differential table. That's how come the Dragons are top. The Dragons needed to beat the Dogs yesterday by 2, and they did. So they go back to top slot. Who do the Dragons and the Panthers play in round 25, the final round of the regular season?
So Panthers play the Melbourne Storm. They've got a tough couple of games to finish with. They've got actually a tough run coming up. They've got the Roosters this week. Then they play Manly at home. They've got the Warriors at home, Sharks at home, Broncos away. So 4 of their next 5 against teams currently in the top 8. Then they have a softish run, Seagulls, Raiders, Titans and the Knights. They need to win a lot of those if they're to be a minor premier, maybe all of those. Then they finish with the Warriors away and the Storm away.
Wow, so a big last fortnight, a huge last
fortnight.
Big
last fortnight off the back of the next 5 games being a big series of runs for them. 4 in 5 they play against the top 8 right there. The Dragons only play 3 teams currently in the top 8 on the way home.
There you go.
They've got 6... they play the remaining 8 games of their remaining 11 against teams outside the top 8. They avoid the Panthers. They avoid the Rabbitohs. They avoid the Sharks. Mm. The 3 form teams, apart from themselves, of the season through this last 6 or so weeks. The Rabbitohs have been on fire. The Sharks, likewise. The Dragons have gone win-loss for a little while now, but they are quite obviously one of the better teams in the competition. They've long established that. So, the Dragons... Sorry, talking about the Dragons. It's hard to play yourselves. they've got a good run home, and the Rabbitohs, they avoid the Panthers, the Dragons, the Warriors, and the Sharks, only playing 3 teams in the top eight.
Okay.
So they play the Raiders in round 24, the Tigers in round 25. They don't play another top eight team. And if you're thinking about minor premiers and wanting to have a little investment perhaps, the Rabbitohs might be a good investment because they play the Eels, then they play the Cowboys, then they play the Bulldogs, then they play the Tigers, then they play the Eels again.
Mm.
That's their next five games. They've just made it six games in a row. They could be on an 11-game winning streak before they finish with the Storm, the Roosters, the Broncos, and then those two games against the Raiders and the Tigers. The Rabbitohs have a great run home like the Dragons do.
Yeah, but still I'm going with St. George Illawarra to win the minor premiership right here, right now, given what you've just told me. I'm sidelined for Eels Rabbitohs Thursday, Woz, and I'll be very keen to look at South Sydney again because I'm hearing from everyone, whether you're a South Sydney fan or not, they're a great team to watch.
Yep.
They're attacking fantastically well.
Their footy has been tremendous. And, you know, we've mentioned this a couple of times on the show, but, you know, back in the preseason, I went and saw the Rabbitohs train a couple of times. I saw them that game they played against Wigan. And, you know, they look impressive in that particular game. They stumbled out of the blocks a little bit, albeit with close losses. I guess round one in Perth against the Warriors, 32 points to 20. They got shown up a little bit there in the middle of the field, I think, by the Warriors, but they bounced back to a close loss, could have won that game against the Panthers. But from that point on, they've only lost two games. So they've been tremendous, winning 10 of their next 12 games to suddenly be in that battle, right there in the battle for the minor premiership.
Yeah, take a bow, everyone involved. You know, Anthony Seibold leading this club really well, and you could talk about South Sydney for 2 hours, Woz, about players being reborn, about their attacking shape, about Greg Inglis, the Burgess twins, Sam Burgess, on and on it goes. And, you know, what's that old cliche? When the Rabbitohs are doing well, the league's doing well. Well, that's the case. Can I tell you what struck me about yesterday, the Holiday Monday game? A little sidelight. A few elements to talk about here, but one was Jason Nightingale coming off the bench. And we thought maybe he's got a little injury, a little niggle that's being nursed at the moment. So I went and spoke to the Dragons, and you touched on it in your commentary. He was actually on the bench as a middle forward. He was going to be rotated for Jack DeBellin, so Jack pull up a bit sore or weary after Origin. I think in the end you said that he came on for Paul Vaughan.
James Graham.
James Graham. So I was thinking, you know, you see John Asiata at the Cowboys go from halves 1 week to playing front row the next. James Graham himself is quite an apt 5'8", even though he's never worn that jumper officially.
Kurt Mann has played that role for them a number of times coming out of the back end of games, and he's basically just out there filling a place in the defensive line. And, you know, Jason Nightingale, you know, he came on for what, maybe the last 8 minutes of the game, didn't get exposed in the middle of the field, like didn't get run over by Aaron Woods or David Clemmer as the Bulldogs were charging home, trying to snatch that one at the death. Kurt Mann has filled the same role. Maybe that's, you know, that swing man, that utility player who can, you know, fill a gap in the middle of the line if he's called on. He's a bigger body than Cameron McInnes.
Yeah.
So if he's up to it, he's got to make, you know, might have to make a couple of tough stops at some stage, like Kurt Mann, he's not a small player himself, Kurt Mann. So, you know, if you had them out there for half an hour, I'd be very concerned.
Mm.
But in small bursts where they're fresh at the back end of the game, not a bad play, is it?
Kurt Mann on a wing yesterday, Jason Nightingale off the bench. You know, they just swapped positions and roles. And, you know, that's part of the strength to Paul McGregor's team, that he can do that. But it raises the broader discussion, the D-body shaping of rugby league. You know, in years past, you were that shape, you played that position only, with the odd exception. Are we starting to see it more and more?
Oh, I think we have for a while, actually.
Yeah.
You know, like the wingers are massive these days. You look at most of the wingers, Nana McDonald. In the old day, he'd have been a front rower comfortably, like body shape-wise back in the, you know, 70s into the 80s, maybe even into the early 90s. Nana McDonald's certainly big enough now, you know, to play, you know, a back row role. It's just a matter of how tough you are to play a lot of minutes in the middle of the field, depending on whether you can defend in the middle of the field. But, you know, Kyle Felt is a huge man.
Yeah.
Suliasi Vunivalu, you can go through all the teams. They've all got big Corey Oates, who has visions at some stage of playing in the back row. Now, you know, with Corey, and with all of these players, It's defense.
Yeah.
They can carry the ball. They can play in attack. They can play a role, playing an edge forward role. But can you defend on the edge of that middle third of the field for sustained periods if you move in four places in the line?
And that's the thing. Our rugby league position is no longer going to be about body shape, but about ticker size. Of course, we've all got the same shape, sized heart, roughly. But you know what I'm referring to there.
Exactly.
So rugby league positions might come down to ruggedness, desire. Victor Radley's a great example. Yeah, he is smaller, I reckon, than at least 50%, maybe 75% of the wingers. Yet there he is, middle of the field, using his body unbelievably because he's got a big heart. So, you know, gone are the days where you line your team up and say, right, you're a winger, you're a halfback, you're a prop. Coaches now look into your soul and get your mental strength and your ticker, for want of a better word, and say, you're playing in the middle, you're playing on the edge, and you can play on a wing because you're a great athlete, but maybe not up to the defensive qualities in field.
Yeah, I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule. There's always, we've seen tough, smaller forwards throughout all, you know, every era. Dallas Johnson was a smallish forward.
Bob O'Reilly, a ball-playing prop, you know. Like he had the skills in an era where a lot of props couldn't even pass a ball. Lucky to catch it.
Yep.
But, you know, so, yeah.
Stumpy Stevens back in the day. You know, there are lots of small forwards.
Yeah.
Alan Tung was a tough, smaller forward.
There you go.
You could go through, you know, all the teams and find players through different areas who played well above their weight. It's just a matter of what's inside. I mean, what you can't measure. You can measure speed. You can measure strength. You can't measure what's inside. And you need plenty of ticker, as you mentioned, to be a smaller forward because, boy, you got to, and all the hookers, you know, like they play in the middle of the field. Apisai Corasau, Jake Granville, all good defenders. And you've got to be, if you're not big and you're not quick, you've got to be really, really tough to play in the NRL. And those blokes are tough.
But it's just struck me how many players 1 week will be in a position so different to the where they find themselves the next week. In comparison with eras past. Just an interesting part of the game.
So that's, I think, where we see things going into the, well, just past this, the middle point of the season, but the second half of the season. The Whips are cracking. Origin, of course, you've got to throw that into the mix. All the teams in contention will be hoping they get through without injury. Luckily, out of Origin 1, touch wood, nobody got hurt in Origin 1. We've got the rep round coming up in just under 2 weeks' time now, beyond the end of this weekend. So round 15 this weekend, then it's the rep round. James Graham and Gareth Widdop have just been selected in that English team to go and play the Kiwis in Denver. Likewise, the Burgess trio, so the Dragons and the Rabbitohs in particular, will have a keen eye on what happens over there in Denver. And the Rabbitohs will have a bunch of players playing in Origin, as will the Dragons. So that they get both those teams will have a lot of players playing in what is that rep weekend. How they recover from that, and then the Origin players have to get through Origin 3 as well. While they've both got, as we've just discovered, very good draws, playing only three teams in the top eight in the run home to the finals, the Dragons and the Rabbitohs have a lot of players playing big games in the next 3 weeks.
And the Dragons are treating it so seriously. They're sending a member of their high-performance team to Denver just to look after. Their mission is to look after.
It's a good move.
Yeah, James Graham, Gareth Widdop. And if they can return fit and healthy and star the following weekend, it will be mission accomplished.
Because they gave the players who weren't involved in Origin 1 a complete week off off the back of their previous game against the Panthers. So they had the bye leading into Origin 1. So that's their bye. They're done. All the teams only get the one bye in 2018 with the rejig draw. So if you're going to have maybe a similar situation where you give the players at least 5-6 days off again, maybe, freshen them up through this middle part of the season, you may as well send the staff over there to make sure the boys in Denver get the best of care.
Yeah, it will be a big rep weekend. We've got the Pacific tests on the Saturday, you'll see on Fox League. Sunday morning, the Denver test. And then Sunday night, Origin. So plenty happening on the rep weekend.
I had a question over the weekend and travelling around. Somebody asked me, and this is a question you get asked a lot, just to step away from talking about the hard and fast, the nuts and bolts of the footy season and the way it shapes up in the NRL at the moment. But I was asked, how did I get my start in commentary? And, you know, it's quite often young people who are looking to get into the media, who want to do what we do, ask that. Sometimes it's just interested fans who just bump up to you at a, you know, at the terminal, the airport, or at a ground, or wherever it might be. How'd you get into what you do? How did you get into doing what we do, calling footy games for a living?
Well, along the same lines, I was filling my car up at a BP service station, and the attendant asked me that very question. He said, "You've got a great job."
I thought you were going to say that he said, "Hey, I've got a job for you."
No, he might have, but he said exactly that. He said, "I love what you do, and how do you get into it?" And so you're right, Wise. We get asked all the time. My journey was a little different to everyone else. A lot of commentators you hear, since I was 6 or 7, I wanted to call the races or be a sports commentator, etc. I had a passion for television. My parents used to accuse me of having square eyes because I loved television as a medium. And I went into sports media through my love for television and how it worked. Ended up Central Western Daily newspaper in Orange, which was also behind the Sunday newspaper in the central west of New South Wales. Then went to Wynn Television, Wollongong. Then to Fox Sports News in 2005. So my background was a journalism background or a newsroom background. And it was one of our former colleagues, Adam Cox, who in 2008, one of our former colleagues, Matt Thompson, had called the under-20s in its inaugural year. And Matty was going on to different challenges. He's now calling NRL for Channel 9. But Coxie said, "We're going to have an audition to see who can call the under-20s for us. Would you like to have a crack?" And I said, "I've only ever called Bush Grand Finals for Wynn Television. I called Bert Gordon steaming down the sideline to win the Cowra Magpies, a Group 10 premiership. Did a couple of Illawarra Rugby League Grand Finals on radio." So I hadn't done any commentary and never really thought it a realm that was going to be for me. But when Coxie asked me to have a go, I expressed my hesitations and self-doubt, said, "No, have a go." So I did it. It was Wiz Freeman and I in a studio back there at our old base there in Pyrmont. And next week, got a call from Adam Cox. He said, "It's yours. We want you to do it." So I said, "Okay." And again, I expressed my reservations and self-doubts, of which there were many. And I remember calling my first game with my producer, Jeremy Markham. It was Gold Coast against Newcastle under-20s at Robina. And I hope I never see it again. Because, but you know what? I must say that calling the under-20s was a very, very steep learning curve, and probably forced me to learn elements of commentary that I wouldn't have had I come straight into an NRL environment where I'm far more familiar with the players. So that was my journey, you know. And having been given a taste for it, I then realised, wow, why didn't I make this a goal earlier? Why didn't I want to do more of this? Mm-hmm. And you never stop learning in this game, and you always self-analyse, and those self-doubts are always just below the surface. But wow, I love it, and I want to do it more and more and more and get better and better and better. What about your story?
Well, yeah, it's addictive, isn't it?
Yes.
Because once you have a little bit of a crack at it, a taste of it, and when it's good, it's really, really good. When you're there, like yesterday, the Bulldogs and the Dragons lead comfortably at halftime, but the Bulldogs go whack, whack, and score 2 tries early in the second half, and you're like, game on here. And it's a big game. Like the Dragons, coming off that loss to the Panthers, they'd lost 2 of their previous 3 against 2 of the contenders, their direct opponents in this race to the minor premiership. And here they are, potentially going to cough up a lead to the Bulldogs, who've been struggling quite obviously throughout 2018. And, you know, it's sensational. There's nowhere you would want rather be than being with the headsets on in the commentary box talking about that, because if you're watching it, you're really involved in living and dying on every play. So if you're doing that, you may as well be talking about it on the telly. So it's fantastic. When it's great, it's sensational. I didn't have as direct a route, I guess, into doing what we do as you. I left school. I was a trainee draftsman. I did a bit of mechanical engineering study at TAFE, at Granville TAFE initially. I went to a couple of different jobs there. One place had a bit of an issue. They sort of didn't fold, but they scaled back. I moved to another place in the city doing the same thing, and then morphed from that into photography. Always had a bit of a liking for photography when I was a kid, and then still did a little bit. Ended up getting a job in photography, studying again at TAFE, doing the Associate Diploma of Photography at Sydney Tech, which at that stage, and may well still be, I don't know, I'm a bit out of the loop, but was the preeminent place to learn the art of photography, whether it be for newspapers or fashion, product photography, whatever it may be. That was where you went and did the, and it was a four-year course. I didn't get through it because I got really crook, as it turns out, with glandular fever, and I didn't work for about a couple of months at one point there, and didn't bat on with the course as well. Bounced from that into a bunch of jobs while I was working out whether I wanted to get back into photography or not. I was a bartender. I was a cellarman at a few different places as well. And I was in this period, I guess it was...
What pub did you work at?
I worked at the Epping Hotel.
Okay.
I worked at Maryland's Bowling Club. I worked at Cumberland Country Golf Club. So I bounced around a bunch of different places. I worked at the Intercontinental Hotel in the city, serving cocktails and Christ knows what.
I wonder if any people listen to your calls now also knowing that bloke served me a beer back
I remember that back in 1987.
Yeah.
So it was around about that period where, I don't know if you saw The Fan just recently, but Vossi produced the old shot of me at Allianz Stadium, the Sydney Football Stadium in 1988, watching the Balmain Tigers play the Bunnies in one of the early games. The stadium had only just opened in 1988. There I was in the crowd, and Vossi's produced that a number of times now on his old show, The Roast at the Nine Network, and Boots and All and whatever else. And then now here, it just lives on in infamy, that shot of me in with the Triple J T-shirt on.
Who found that shot? Was that Vossi?
Vossi did.
Does he trawl through every cutaway during rugby league game trying to spot people?
He used to, yes. It's exactly what he used to do.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
For when he was doing, on the Nine Network, when he was doing Boots and All with Gus Gould, he would literally go through the racks of tapes, and there would be, you know, he'd go, so he wouldn't go watch every game, every minute of every game. But remembering back in those days, this is well before every game was covered.
Yeah.
So there might only be two full games from those rounds back in the 80s, and then there would be just news highlights pretty much of the rest of the games. So to go back and see the highlights of those, you know, many of those games from the pre-Super League, say pre-1996, when was probably the first year every game got covered with the advent of Fox Sports. Now, we didn't have Super League in 96, so maybe Super League in 97 was the first full season of every game being shown live on TV. And some of them weren't even live still, because Nine were showing games in replay up until only just recently.
Yeah, I remember the Channel 9 helicopter used to land at Wynn Stadium in Wollongong.
Pick up the tapes.
Pick up the tapes and bring it back here to Willoughby.
That's
so they
right.
could put on the 6 o'clock news. But we digress. Go back.
So I'm working at various bar jobs and whatever else. I was playing baseball at this stage. So I'd given up footy and soccer and cricket. I was playing baseball winter and summer. I was taking some photos and doing some stories for the local, Blacktown Guardian, I think.
Okay.
The Blacktown Advocate.
Okay.
And the Western, there are a couple of the local papers.
Yeah.
God, I'm showing my age here. I can't remember the late.
Wasn't the Campbelltown Chronicle.
No, it wasn't the Campbelltown Chronicle.
MacArthur
wasn't
Express.
The Parramatta Advertiser. And so taking photos, writing stories for these papers, and one day, now this is the seminal moment. If there's one moment which has sparked my change in career and life, I guess, in general, I'm taking photos. I'm still figuring that I want to be a sports photographer. So even though I was working in photography at this stage amongst some bar jobs and whatever else, and I'm at Leichhardt Oval now. You can't even remotely do this these days because it's much more regulated. Back in the old days, to get into a ground and to get onto the sideline taking photos, you didn't need media accreditation. You just needed to look as though you had the right to be there. So I used to go, this is serious, I don't know if I should tell this.
Yeah,
I used to go to NRL venues with a couple of cameras dangling around my neck and with a camera bag over the shoulder, looking as if this is true in life, isn't it? If you walk in looking as though you belong, you do belong.
Yeah.
Perception is reality. And so I used to walk into Leichhardt and other places at this point in time with my camera gear dangling everywhere. I didn't have the same quality of camera gear as the pros did, the guys shooting for the papers and whomever else at that stage. It wasn't websites because websites didn't exist. So all the newspaper snappers, they had the massive big lenses. I had decent lenses, but not the same quality of lenses. I would just walk in. I would walk past the bosun, Eric Cox, who used to be the Guardian. Remember Eric Cox?
Yes,
you would
yes.
know Eric Cox, and plenty of listeners
yes.
would know Eric Cox. If you're younger, he was the guy. He was an old... No, he wasn't. He was he served in the Navy.
Yeah,
where he got that's how he got the name, the bosun.
Yeah,
but Eric Cox would be there guarding the tunnel, and I'd just walk in, "G'day, Eric," and stroll past him and take up a position on the. So once you're in, you're in.
Yeah,
nobody's coming up to saying, "Have you got your accreditation?" Because there was no accreditation.
The good old days
in the late '80s when I'm pulling this off, there was no accreditation. So I used to go and take photos. So one of these days, I'm at Leichhardt. And the Tigers, I think, were playing maybe Manly, the Sea Eagles, and it's wet and it's ordinary, it's cold, running up and down the sideline trying to get good angles of shots. It's muddy. And I look up to the back of the grandstand to all the radio boxes. And, you know, at this stage, wasn't working for 2UE, which is where I eventually started doing some radio stuff. I look up and there's Ray Hadley and the boys, the continuous call team, Johnny Gibbs. I guess it was Zorba and Hollywood.
Yep.
The 2KY, they would have been next door. The ABC were there. And I'm like, you should be up there, not down here in the cold and the wet and the slop. You need to be up there where it's warm and dry talking about it. But with no background remotely in talking about rugby league, whether it be radio, TV, anything. Never done anything like it in my life. But I had this moment where I thought, that's where you need to be. So how do I then make that step? So I start writing these stories for the papers around about this time. This is all happening in this, I guess this is sort of 1987, 1988, around that sort of era.
Canberra and Manly dominating the comp.
Yep, absolutely. The Tigers were coming into their own. They'd been a good team in the mid-80s coming into, you know, making the grand finals in 88 and then 89, losing both of them to the Dogs and the Raiders. And off the back of writing these stories for the local papers, the Australian Baseball League starts up. In 1989, 1990 was the first season. And so I played baseball. I played a decent standard. I played the first grade comp in what was the New South Wales comp. So I was never going to be good enough to play in the National League, this new, brand new National League that was starting up. But I knew all the players from Sydney, certainly, and played against them on Sundays, week in, week out. And so I rang up 2UE, just cold called John Brennan, as it turns out, who was in charge of programming at 2UE. And Breno was one of the original voices, along with Ray Rabs Warren of the AMCO Cup back in the early 70s when midweek football came about for the first time. So I didn't know John from a bar of soap, but I knew who he was. He was a legend in Sydney radio. So I ring him up as the head of programming at 2UE and say, "John, I am Neville Nobody, but I play baseball, sports today. You have this program with Peter Bosley on 2UE, another legend of Sydney sports radio. Is there any chance you need somebody to talk about this new baseball league?" So he says, "Mate, I can't see why not. Give Bos a call and see what he says." Simple as that. So I call Peter Bosley and he says, "Well, if there's a competition, we do all the national comps. We have somebody to talk about it. You're our baseball correspondent." And so I started ringing up on a Friday. I would do a preview for the weekend's games. I would do a review on the Monday as to what happened over the weekend with the baseball. And it just grew from there. I started doing, used to go to the Sheffield Shield games for 2UE on weekends when I was still working 9 to 5 back in photography at this stage after catching on again with another place, doing, you know, working in behind the scenes, developing photos and taking some photos of real estate and whatever else, still trying to work out how I make this transition from a real job into this world of the media and talking about sports. So working Monday to Friday and then working on the weekends for free at 2UE. So I'd hang around in the studio working with Andrew Moore, who's now on the ABC, Andrew Voss, who works with us right here at Fox Sports, Mark Braidbrook, who previously worked with us, Ray Hadley, who is a legend, obviously, in sports radio, Johnny Gibbs, Manly legend. Used to watch him as a kid growing up. Suddenly I'm going to the football. By 1992, I've transitioned into going to the football with Ray Hadley and Johnny Gibbs, working as their producer. Used to carry around all the equipment and do voiceovers on the hour, do a little preview in the 12 o'clock news, and then do the same thing at the 6 o'clock news. And then did that for a couple of seasons, working, you know, shifts at 2UE. And then Super League starts up, another seminal moment. I can remember exactly where I was. I was in the car park of the medical centre up at Baulkham Hills. My girlfriend at the time had to go and see the doctor. And I'm sitting in the car waiting for her to come out of the doctor's, and this news report on the radio, and it may well have been Ray Hadley coming on saying it was April the 1st, 1995.
Yeah.
You won't believe this. We've got word that there is a rebel competition about to, well, starting up, and News Limited are signing players and teams to start up a competition to be called Super League.
And you said, no, that's an April Fool's joke.
Well, you know, you'd be forgiven, but it was beyond midday, so I'm thinking this is probably real, and Ray wasn't the type to come on and make April Fool's jokes about stuff at that stage involving rugby league.
Yeah.
He was the kingpin, and he wasn't about to come out making cracking jokes about it. So I was like, my God, not thinking at this point in time, well, there's my next port of call. Mm. I can be a rugby league caller. But as it turns out, Super League was the way I got into calling football, because I went from 2UE to Channel 10. Again, baseball was my avenue there. They started up a Sunday show called Pepsi Cup Baseball. So by September 93, I'm calling baseball with Matty White and doing a highlights program around that, working on Sports Tonight, which is started up at the same time I start there at Channel 10,
yep.
Working in their news department, their sports news department as well. And then suddenly, Super League is announced. It's 1995. I'm working at Channel 10 going, wow, that's interesting. I guess they might need some commentators at some stage if this new competition does start on what is to become Fox Sports. Mm. And I get a call later in that year. Vossi played a part in this, from a fellow called Craig Dobbs, a long-time producer here, or in the early days. Dobbsy, very key component of beginning what is now Fox Sports. It's so massive, this place now, compared to what it was in January of 96 when Fox
Galaxy?
Sports started. It was Galaxy and Premier Sports before that, but became Fox Sports full-time from January 96. So, long story short, I go in, have a chat with Dobbsy, who's heard me call some baseball for Channel 10, and he says, how would you like to call some footy? I'm like, would I like to call some footy? Trying to play it cool.
Yeah.
And you don't want to give away your hand too early. I'm like, it might be pretty interesting. I could think about that for about 3 seconds. So he said, give me a call tomorrow and we'll have a chat. I said, rang you back. I said, yeah, I might have a bit of a think about that. I like the idea of coming over to this new venture called Fox Sports and calling footy. And 22 years later, here we are.
And who knows how many games under the belt. Can you remember your first game was?
I can. It was side. We had a couple of little practice runs. We had a cup form mainly for the cameras, because we had some new ideas back in those days. The cameras, they're going to try some different camera positions because Brian Morelli was the head director of Super League for Fox Sports. Now, he had been the man, along with David Hill, who revolutionised the coverage of cricket back in the late 70s, quite obviously, with World Series cricket. So David Hill was the brains trust as far as the production of it, and Brian Morelli with all those new camera positions and the ideas of replays and how it all came together was Brian Morelli and David Hill. So BC, Brian Morelli, was in charge of all that sort of things for Fox Sports. And we had a couple of trial runs at Leichhardt Oval with some junior teams playing, and I jumped into the commentary position. They set it up as if it was a full OB with the trucks there and everything set up. And I can't even think who the schoolboys teams were, a couple of schoolboys teams. And apart from that, my first game of commentary for real was the Western Reds versus the Penrith Panthers. Brandy's return to the Panthers after spending a couple of seasons with the Warriors.
In Perth?
No, at Penrith.
Okay.
Belinda Carlisle was the pre-game entertainment.
Wow.
From the Go-Go's.
When
Belinda Carlisle. Remember,
Belinda,
if you're
Carlisle.
Old enough to think back now, it's 20. So if you're only 16, 17, listening to this, you'll have no clue about any of this. But Belinda Carlisle.
She's a big act.
She was a big act. And that was the whole idea around the beginning of Super League, that we would have these big acts. And I can't remember who else, or various others at the time, but Belinda Carlisle did the pre-game entertainment at Penrith, good old Penrith Park. was it Penrith Stadium at that stage? It wasn't a sponsored name at that stage. And then the Western Reds, Greg Fleming scored the first try, and Brandy scored a try off the scrum base, ran 70 metres in his return. I can remember saying, "Welcome back to Penrith, Brandy Alexander." You know, that would be almost my exact words. There are some things, again, that just stick in your mind, you know, decades later. But I said something like, "Welcome back, Brandy."
And isn't it funny how it works? Your first game, one of the most significant highlights, is a bloke who you go on to call hundreds and hundreds of games with side by side in the commentary box. That sort of stuff happens too often when you'd never expect it to happen.
Yeah, completely stunning how it, you know, works out. So he, in the first game I call, he scores a try, and like you say, we've done so many games and travelled around the country doing tons of games together. It's bizarre, isn't it?
And when you look back on your commentary career, yours much longer than mine, one group of people I feel so indebted to are the people I call with, who help you out, who, you know, tolerate and accept, you know, from Gary Belcher and Scotty Sattler very early in my under 20s days, all the way through, you know, the blokes beside me, it's a joy. I haven't had one that I've ever thought was difficult, I've had a problem with. They've all been fantastic, and they're the people who I really think I want to give a slap on the back to.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and there are people who've done the same with me throughout that journey. I remember Frank Hyde, the great Frank Hyde, at a function when I was at 2UE. It was at North Sydney Oval, and I can't remember whether it was a launch for something, but Frank Hyde was there, and I was having a chat to Frank, and I'm just a kid, and I'm in awe of Frank Hyde because he was a legend again. I didn't really know him as a player because his playing career had finished long before, and then he was a referee, and then, you know, the leading commentator on radio at the time at 2SM through that period where I was growing up listening to footy on the radio, he was the best. And Frank said to me, "Well, if you want to do this and you think you're good enough, when you get your chance, make sure you're ready." Mm. And that stuck with me. It was like the lesson was right there. If you think at some stage you're good enough, you need to practice and somehow do commentary. You just can't just do commentary for the first time. Now, I did that with rugby league, I guess, in a way, but I'd already done a couple of seasons of calling baseball for Channel 10. But before that, I had done, to get that chance doing the baseball on TV for Channel 10, I used to go, so when I wasn't working, so part of, in amongst this menagerie of jobs I was doing all at the same stage, I was doing some photography 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. I'm doing some stuff for 2UE on the weekends. I was doing some PA announcing for the Sydney Wave baseball team. And then in games I wasn't doing the PA, because there were two Sydney teams, I would go and I would call baseball games from the back of the grandstand with a pair of headphones on, as we are here today, a score sheet in front of me, or having a mate beside me score, and I would call 9 innings of baseball because I knew Frank Hyde had said to me, "If you're going to do it, you've got to be ready." So I think, well, I've got to be. How do you get this chance? So I would go to games and call baseball games from the back of the grandstand, probably annoying the hell out of the fans in front of me, some of whom,
there you go,
were fairly complimentary, saying, "Oh, we really enjoyed having some commentary behind us there." But there you go, and I've told this story a bunch of times at various speaking engagements or to schools or whatever it might be, groups who come into Fox Sports here, the Clontarf Foundation kids. If I can be where I am now, anybody can be where I am now, because you don't get born as a commentator. You don't leave school as a footy commentator or a sports commentator. It's a blank. The great thing about TV or radio even is it's a blank canvas. You can make of it what you want it to be. And at some point, that little fire was sparked inside me, and I thought, wow, I'd love to do this. And I was able, luckily, fortunately enough, able to do it. But if I can do it, given the bar jobs and the photo jobs and starting out as a trainee draftsman out of school, thinking, you know, I could still be there in a drawing office somewhere right now, 30-something years later, 35 years later after leaving school, I could be in a drawing office still, but here I am. So if I can do it, trust me, the lesson is anybody can do it.
And on having a son who's about to go into year 11 and is stressing about picking his electives and a little bit of outside pressure is to make sure you get it right. You've got to set yourself up for life. Boys, don't stress at 16, 18, 20, 22, because whatever you do in your early 20s, chances are you're not going to be doing it at 30 or 35 or 40. It's not the be-all and end-all as you come to the end of your schooling career. It's much more important if you're working hard and got a zest for life. tick those boxes, the rest will look after itself.
Pretty much.
And was when you come back to the fact we get pulled up and people say how we've got the best job in the world, we like hearing that, and I agree with that. We are the luckiest humans walking the planet, and I can imagine why other people look in on it and say, geez, those blokes are lucky. The only thing I'll add to that is that it's not just turning up at the footy, putting the headsets on, and off you go. There's a bit of bit of work behind the scenes, Speak to our wives as to, you know, the fact we're still up past midnight trawling through different information and looking up different facts and figures.
Because what I said yesterday, like, it's a great place. There's no place you would rather be than in that moment calling that game. But it's also a pretty lonely place to be if you've got the headsets on and it's live and you think you're not ready or whatever else. You've got your backside hanging in the breeze every time you go on live TV. It's an awful place to be if you suddenly feel as though I don't have the chops. And I've had this sensation a couple of times doing sports where I was just thrown into doing something and I was like, oh boy, I don't know if I can carry this off. And with a bit of bull dust and a bit of bluster, you managed to get your way through. But that, thankfully, has only been a couple of rare times over the course of the past 25 years or so.
Yeah. The other element of it, it's a pretty lonely place to be in your hotel room after doing a game where something's gone wrong because you've been caught out.
You're beating yourself up.
You're missing family wedding number 15 for the year because you're out with a job. But to summarise it all, it's the best job. We're very, very, very lucky to do it.
Didn't intend this to be the life and times. This is your life with Matt Russell and Warren Smith this week.
But you're right. We get asked that all the time.
Yeah, we do.
How do you get into that?
Yeah. So there you go. That's
a hard question to answer.
That's how you get into it.
There you go.
It only took us half an hour probably to tell the story. We've hijacked this week's podcast, telling our little life stories. Let's go full circle and round it out quickly, very quickly, with some picks for round 15. You're going to kick it off. You're at Eels Rabbitohs on the sideline for this one on Thursday night.
Looking forward to seeing the Rabbitohs close up again, and they should be beating Parramatta on form.
Can't disagree there. I'm going to be up there in Townsville, the Cowboys at home against the Warriors. Warriors impressive over the course of the weekend against the Seagulls. Despite being on the road, the Cowboys are untippable at the moment, unfortunately for them. You know, it's a big game for Matt Scott. Again, chance to press his claims for Origin 2. Now, I think Kevin Walters will have decided whether he's in or out before what he sees on Friday night. But a big game from Matt Scott certainly wouldn't hurt his claims on a spot for Queensland in Origin 2 in just under 2 weeks' time. I'm going to say the Warriors on the road can win that one. The Roosters and the Panthers, second game on Friday night at Allianz Stadium. What a big game this is.
A big game for the traffic controllers because there's AFL next door at the SCG at exactly the same time.
Right.
So if you're going to Allianz Stadium to watch Roosters Panthers,
public transport people,
leave very, very early.
Catch the train into Central and then walk up the hill from there.
Yeah. Isn't it a great game on paper? Was Roosters at home, I'll go with them.
Yeah. I'm going to say the Panthers because I like their form better than the Roosters.
Okay.
Bulldogs and Titans to kick it off on Super Saturday, 3 o'clock at Belmore.
I was going to say, here's the winner in this game.
To Belmore. I've called a few games at Belmore since they've returned there in the last couple of seasons. The Bulldogs. The Bulldogs will win that one.
Yeah, the Bulldogs have been playing pretty well, haven't they? Losing so many games, a bit like West Tigers, by narrow margins.
Yep.
Yesterday, Monday, another case in point. I reckon Dean Pay might finally have some payola in this one.
Yeah, Titans have potentially more points in them, but I like the Dogs. Their defence, for the most part, has been pretty good during this run of near misses. The Dragons and the Seagulls, the second game on Super Saturday. This one at Wynn Stadium down there in your part
in
of the
Gong.
World. In the Gong.
Calling this one was, and I think I'll be calling a St. George Illawarra victory. Paul McGregor against Trent Barrett in the coach's box. A nice element there. Former teammates, good mates. That Dragons team, that Steelers team and Dragons team they played in has thrown up some coaches with Nathan Brown also involved. The Dragons will beat Manly, you would imagine.
I think you're right. Sharks and Broncos. Now, we talked about this game in our look through the top eight and beyond earlier in the show. What do you think, Sharks or Broncos? It's at Southern Cross Group Stadium.
I'd go Sharks. Yeah, Sharks. They're four tries in the second half against West Tigers. Really good. Valentine Holmes emerged with that fantastic try. Paul Gallen, you know, gee, he's milking his aging body for all it's worth. He scored the try to spark that win. Then he set up the pass. It was only a pass, but he had to throw it for Valentine Holmes to race away. Luke Lewis, you'd expect that he'd get over his head knock, which was actually a pinched nerve in his neck more than a head knock. So he'll be there as well, and he was going well. Cronulla will win.
Yeah, Sharks were mine also. On Sunday, the Knights and the Storm. This one up there at McDonald Jones Stadium, a run of games at home for the Newcastle Knights against the Melbourne Storm earlier this season. To give you the form line, the Melbourne Storm, if you think back to, where was it? Round six, they beat the Newcastle Knights 40 points to 14. That was down in Melbourne. I don't know it'll be 40 points to 14 this time around, but I think Melbourne will win.
Yeah, Melbourne to win that one. Newcastle, I think it's the second of five straight games at McDonald Jones Stadium. You'll get a good crowd to call with, Woz, but the crowd might not see a Newcastle victory.
Yes, I'm up there calling that one on Sunday after travelling back from Townsville on the Saturday. And the Tigers and the Raiders, a massive game. As we said, a four-point game, quite obviously, this one. Ninth versus 10th on the ladder, the first of two meetings between these two teams. They play again in round 22. What do you think, Tigers West or the Green Machine? Tigers
West
at home?
Tigers. I've seen a bit of them lately, and not winning, but not embarrassing themselves by any stretch, and less injury hit than the Raiders, I would argue. So West Tigers at Campbelltown.
Yeah, Joey Leilua will have to pass a concussion protocol before this game. Jordan Rapana out as well. Their right edge looks less potent, quite obviously, suddenly with those two. Well, one of them certainly missing, one of them in doubt for that game. Yeah, the Tigers, but only just.
As we wrap it up, Woz, let's dedicate this podcast to a player that I've admired so much for a decade and more. Peter Wallace, announcing his retirement immediately. Everyone's got a story about Pete Wallace. I remember interviewing him countless times and never getting a furrowed brow or any sort of pushback. Just a good bloke to talk to and always available. But apart from that, off the field, on the field, what a tough individual. He's one of those blokes who, despite his size, is almost indestructible. And my story is calling him, playing for Penrith against Cronulla at Bathurst, Cronulla or Canberra, one of the two. He did his knee in that game, played the rest of the game, and came to the media conference. Sat beside Anthony Griffin, I think it was at the time, with a blown ACL. Didn't know it fully at the time, but suspected as much, and still ticked his duty as a media man that day to come and I shook my head afterwards when I found out he'd done his ACL. That incident sums up Peter Wallace to a T. Does his knee, finishes the game, fronts the media conference. What about that?
So tough. And when you talk to Peter close up, doing an interview or pre-game or might be a training, again, you see these blokes on the field and he looks like a smaller player. He's a big, solid body. As far as the general population is concerned, Peter Wallace is a big, strong man and a tough guy to go along with it. And tough mentally, because when Matt Elliott was the coach at Penrith, didn't like Peter Wallace as far as what he saw bringing to the team in regards to his play in the halves. So he goes to Brisbane, catches on there, plays some really good footy with Brisbane, eventually falls out of favour with Anthony Griffin, is in and out of the team, can't get a regular spot, comes back to the Penrith Panthers as a half, and eventually transitioned into playing full-time as a hooker, which, when you cast your memory back, everyone's like, oh, geez, this is a stop-gap measure. I don't know that Peter Wallace is tough enough to defend in the middle of the defensive line. Well, he proved that in spades, didn't he, as you've just mentioned, over the course of his career. So a couple of times during his career, pretty much told, I don't think you're good enough to play for us in the NRL, but had the mental strength and the fortitude to say, no, you're wrong, I'll prove you wrong, and has stuck on to play all these games. What a career.
And not that most players need to be taught this, but it is another reminder of how quickly it can all end. Because this time a year ago, Peter Wallace was selected to play game one for New South Wales, went to Newcastle, did his groin, missed the Origin series, and barely a year down the track, it's all over. From Origin to the end, in the space of 12 months, it can happen to anyone running around an NRL field.
And another player, talking about our careers a moment ago, like, it's incredible we've been around that long now that players' careers begin. We'd call their debuts, maybe, and we see their entire career and they retire. We're on either end of it. It's hard to imagine that now, over the course of 22, I'm in my 23rd season, 23rd year at Fox Sports. It's amazing to think how many careers you've seen begin and end in that time. And Peter Wallace, one of the great careers. Yeah. So well played, Pete. It's been a real treat to be able to call you in action, and good luck in the future. He's going to be on the coaching staff with the Panthers, so all the best there. I think he'll be a natural. He'll be really, and he has the respect of everybody immediately out there.
Who knows whether he can be an NRL coach? I don't think Pete even knows that yet, but if anyone has positioned themselves well to make that transition in years to come, it's Pete Wallace.
Well, he knows more about coaching footy than I did calling footy when I began all those years ago. So he's in a good spot. I'm sure he'll do very well. Matty, been a fun chat. Interesting chat.
Yeah. We'll be back again after, what are we up to? Round 15 this weekend. It's flying by.
The whips are cracking. That is, until next week, you can take me now. I have seen it all.